You're listening to There's a Better Way, smart talk on healthcare and technology. If you're up for energizing and story-driven conversations with national healthcare leaders driving industry innovation across the country, then you are in the right place. Our subject today is independent pharmacy. It's a subject our guest, Doug Hoy, understands inside and out. As the CEO of the National Community Pharmacists Association, where he's been for over a decade. Of course, it doesn't hurt that Doug grew up in the pharmacy world. In fact, Doug's father started a family pharmacy the same year that he was born. So who better to ask about independent pharmacy and its role in the future of patient care? But before I introduce Doug, I'd like to clue you, our listeners, into what our podcast is all about this season. It's about how we're helping healthcare heal itself. That's the lens we'll use to focus all of our conversations. And we have a great range of interesting conversations this season. We'll talk with pharmacy experts like Doug Hoy, and we'll talk with doctors and health IT experts and innovators who are working to help healthcare heal itself across the nation, including at the highest levels of government, from the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT and straight to the White House. So I'd like to offer a warm welcome to the third season of our podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. Well, welcome, Doug. I am so happy to have you on the show today.
It's great to be here, Melanie.
Well, you've been CEO for the National Community Pharmacists Association, or NCPA, for about 13 years now. And the NCPA is quite amazing all by itself, having been around for almost 125 years. I want to dive into your background, but before I do that, can you just start out by telling us why independent pharmacy is so important, and what are some of the key challenges we need to address?
Independent pharmacies represent about a third of all the pharmacies in the country, and that often surprises people. People are used to the big chains and chains like CVS and Walgreens, Walmart. If you add them all together, that's about the number of independent pharmacies there are in the country. Independent pharmacies, we are in rural areas. We're often in urban areas, and we're in suburban areas. But in particular, 57% of our locations are in areas that the CDC ranks as either socially vulnerable or highly socially vulnerable. So we're in kind of the final mile of a lot of geographic locations. So that's one thing that's really important. That really came through during the pandemic, where pharmacies, not just independent pharmacies, but pharmacists and their pharmacy teams vaccinated over 300 million people and really helped lead the world in overcoming the pandemic. So those locations, that's one important reason for independence. Another is that the independent pharmacies often have relationships. They're in their communities. They've often grown up in their communities. They've been part of their communities, and the communities trust them. And so people will come to their community pharmacies with issues and challenges that they just can't get served in other venues. I personally think that they are kind of a healthcare safety net, if you will, for millions of patients that don't fit on the healthcare assembly line. The healthcare assembly line is great if patients are the same and don't have a lot of individual needs, but there's millions of patients that have individual needs that it takes time to figure out. It takes a relationship to trust. It takes some background about that patient to know what the best solution, the best medication solution is for them. And I really think that if independent pharmacies weren't around, there'd be millions of patients who would just kind of fall through the cracks. And that falling through the cracks would increase healthcare costs. And I think, unfortunately, also result in fatalities if there weren't these independent pharmacies there to be this kind of volunteer safety net for these millions of patients.
Oh, thanks for that. That was great background. And I can't wait to dig in further there and really understand, you know, what some of the challenges are that face independent pharmacy. Let's start where you started. Where did you grow up? How did you get started in pharmacy?
Well, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm right on the Kansas-Oklahoma border. I grew up a pharmacist kid. My dad was a pharmacist. He is a pharmacist. Opened his pharmacy the same year I was born. So I was literally born into pharmacy. I started working in the pharmacy when I was 13. That's where I started and really just, you know, kind of grew up inside the pharmacy. The pharmacy staff were, in some respects, kind of surrogate, not surrogate parents, but
it was your family.
Surrogate family. Yeah. As far as like teaching me things that I needed to know.
Well, so what did you come to understand about the life of a pharmacist that drew you to that life for yourself?
You know, it wasn't an instantaneous realization. And I have two older brothers, two younger sisters, and both my older brothers were in the pharmacy. And they did not go into pharmacy. They went into other professions, and as did my sisters. I think it was really in college where I kind of caught the bug, actually in pharmacy school. So I was already in pharmacy school, which is pretty hard to get into, especially in those days. And it was probably my second year of pharmacy school that it all came together for me as far as being able to make a difference in the lives of people. I'm not a kid at this point. And it just, it hit me that these people coming in the pharmacy, a lot of them either knew my dad or my mom or even my grandparents. I didn't know them, but they somehow knew me. And here I am as a youngster, making a small difference in their life, very small difference at that point, because, you know, I hadn't finished, you know, pharmacy school. So that made an impact on me. Like, hey, I'm able to contribute something that is making a difference in this person's lives. And even more importantly, the team around me, I mean, because they were able to really make a difference and contribute versus just the light things I was able to do as a 21-year-old.
So how did you end up at NCPA?
I practiced in the independent pharmacy settings I worked at Walgreens for 5 hours in Denver. That didn't
for
work
5
out.
Hours?
Yeah, that didn't work out. But, you know, as much my fault as theirs, probably just not a good match. But for about 5 years, I practiced, and I was very fortunate to practice in settings that not only had traditional independent pharmacy, but also we also did the consulting for long-term care facilities. We had the contract with the hospice unit in our town of about 35,000 people. We also built a building, a home infusion area to do home infusion, including the clean room and all of the requirements that go with that. So I was very fortunate in the different places I worked, including for my dad for about a year and a half of that 5 years. But as far as NCPA, I had been in the Midwest all of my life, and I was in my mid-20s at this point. And I thought, you know, someday I'll probably settle down and probably have a family and kids, and that will not be a good time to want to travel and you know, have this kind of wanderlust. Just by very much happenstance, I applied for a job at NCPA that had opened up. I really didn't think I had any chance. I never thought I would be moving to the East Coast, but to my surprise, they hired me. And actually, one of the first Surescripts employees was working at NCPA, and he was the person who recommended hiring me. That was 20 plus years ago.
But here you are, working with independent pharmacies across the country. So not just one, but all.
And it's been a rewarding experience too, to be able to represent 20,000 pharmacies and really almost live vicariously through them, through their successes.
So let's move to your role then as CEO of NCPA. NCPA's mission is to promote the interests of independent pharmacists to serve their patients and communities. You have said that your approach is bifurcated, which really means you're working on today's challenges and you're also working to address the future. So let's dig into this. Like, what advantages do community pharmacists have? In other words, what's their ace in the hole in this business environment today in healthcare?
I think one of their aces in the hole is that they're connected to the community. Patients want to see them. When patients have a choice, they want to go to their independent pharmacy. There is a connection. There's a relationship there. I think that's one of their aces in the hole. A second one is that because they're the owner, they're highly motivated to care for that patient, not only because they're the owner and their financial standpoint, their livelihood depends on it, but also they're going to see that same patient at the grocery store, at their church, at their synagogue, at the little league field. They're going to run into that patient again. And relationships do matter. So I think that's the motivation for that owner and his or her team is very, very high to make sure that patient is taken care of. They take it, it almost sounds cliche, but they take healthcare personally. If that patient gets cared for or doesn't get cared for, that's something they're thinking about at 3 a.m. that night is, I personally was able to help or couldn't help that patient. So it's a very personal experience, which is 99% of the time a big positive. And again, the trust and the relationship that patient has, those are two. I guess also the accessibility. There are a growing number of pharmacy deserts out there, and those deserts are largely created when an independent pharmacy is forced out of business.
So we can see that there are about 2/3 of counties in the country have less than one primary care provider per 1,500 population. And we can also see that more than 2/3 of those counties have enough pharmacy to make a difference. And that's really where you're headed with that, right? Is that pharmacy has an opportunity to help in these care deserts.
Yes, that's exactly right. There's a growing shortage, certainly of primary care physicians in the country. And pharmacists are not interested in, you know, placing primary care physicians. That's not our desire. We are able to supplement primary care. And again, we saw this during the pandemic where vaccinations, as one example, that had traditionally been done in a traditional primary care environment, all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, it's been growing, but that became, the pharmacy has become the preferred place for patients to get their vaccinations. And there are other primary care services that pharmacists provide and can provide that supplement the work of the primary care other primary care providers.
You know, the other piece of data that we saw on the network this year is that we've seen some growth in pharmacists as prescribers. Now, it's not a lot of pharmacists, so we're, you know, that are prescribing, but we've seen a 28, almost 29% growth in pharmacists year over year as prescribers. Where does that fit?
Yeah, I think that's a growing trend. I don't know if that those data were run during pandemic, because for my own mother, my parents are a little bit older, and dad got COVID. So I said to my mom, who's a breast cancer survivor, fairly recent, and so has a vulnerable immune system. Yeah. I said, hey mom, that's great that you're helping dad while he has COVID. Get on Paxlovid, please. And she called a primary care provider, and they did not return her calls. I called a primary care provider as a concerned son from 1,000 miles away, and they didn't return my calls. So I prescribed it. So I only give that story because I know pharmacists on the front line, they were able to prescribe things like Paxlovid. They were able to prescribe, obviously, the immunizations themselves. And so some of these essential primary care services, primary care prescriptions, pharmacists are well positioned to prescribe. And I think that's going to only grow not in competition, but in partnership with other primary care providers, because pharmacists are so accessible, because the brick and mortar pharmacies are so prevalent with about 55,000 operating locations throughout the country between chains and independents. I think it'll ultimately be good for patients from an access standpoint, and being able to get medications they need that keep them out of the emergency room and keep them out of the hospital.
What is the advantage? I mean, there's probably clear advantages to the community that does have one. What can we do to help prevent some of these closures?
I'm glad you asked this, because it's a real crisis that the pharmacy community is seeing right now. In the independent sector, we're seeing a pharmacy close a day on average. Last year, we saw two chain pharmacies close per day. The economic model is just not sustainable for pharmacies. And some of the consequences, I know one member, he sent me an example where his pharmacy was able to, a family came to him, a family member was using multiple medications, many of them for mental illness. And what this pharmacy did was they were able to package these medications for mental illness for this family member so that it was easy, and it was easy for him to be compliant with his medication, to be adherent with his medication. And they saw great improvements with this family member who was battling, a mental illness. Unfortunately, that pharmacy had to close, and the next pharmacy was 15 miles away, and they had limited access to transportation, so they were not able to get this family member's medications packaged the same way, got them through probably their mailbox. And unfortunately, that patient is no longer doing well. They are struggling with their mental illness, and their medication is not optimally helping this patient, because they're not taking the medication in an optimal way. Gosh, that seems like a simple problem. Can't we just package the medications correctly? Can't this patient somehow get that? What these independent pharmacists are doing, they're that last safety net, again, that's helping that patient who can't get services or doesn't kind of fit in the mold of other patients. They're a lot harder, a lot more challenging, a lot more complex, and it takes more time. And those are the patients that I think get really hurt when a pharmacy closes.
You talked about the assembly line, and that's all very convenient if you're not a complex patient. But if you're a complex patient, these meds and the care stacks up on itself, and it's not all automated. In a value-based care arrangement, they're incented to make it work, but yet the patient isn't, how does all that fit together?
I think that's where there are the biggest opportunities for community pharmacy. It's also been one of the biggest challenges, because payers, other healthcare providers aren't used to working with pharmacies outside of the dispensing mode, or at least traditionally they're not used to working with pharmacies outside of the dispensing mode. But those are some big opportunities. So for example, some of these more complex patients, or some of these even put high cost patients, they're high cost because of their complexities, or they're showing up in the emergency room, or because of the type of care that they need. Those patients are walking into the pharmacy. There are many opportunities for the pharmacist or someone on their team to be able to sort of check in with that patient. How are you doing today, Mrs. Smith? Are you taking your medicine okay? Are you able to swallow those tablets? Are you keeping them in the refrigerator? Maybe we could take your blood pressure today and record that. If you're an insurance plan and you want to reduce those costs, the patient's cost as much as possible, and you want to keep that patient out of the hospital, out of the emergency room, are there some simple things that you can do working with the local pharmacist and their teams that can reduce the risk of healthcare, of emergency room admittance or hospitalization? We're working on that through an entity called CPESN, which stands for Community Pharmacy Enhanced Services Network. It's a network of about 3,500 local pharmacies that are in states through most of the country where they're providing some of these value-based care services. And they've seen some nice successes by being able to help, whether it be a state plan, a Medicaid plan, a local insurer, a national insurer, provide services that help these socially vulnerable patients so that they can stay healthy and so that, frankly, their costs are reduced.
I'm so glad you brought up CPESN. Can you give me an example of where value-based care has worked and where the pharmacist is really part of that evolving care team?
Our last president was doing was remote patient monitoring, where he and his team have partnered with a local physician. And the physician gives the pharmacy access. So the patient goes into the pharmacy, pharmacist and their team equip this patient with technology to be able to remotely monitor the patient, remote patient monitoring. And what some of that's self-explanatory, that the technology is able to, whether, you know, a wearable device or something similar to that, is able to send information to the pharmacist and their team. And that's good. And you know, they're able to check on that. The other part of that is that the physician has given the pharmacist authority to adjust medication therapy. Maybe they're monitoring blood glucose and they're seeing their blood glucose go up, or for longer term A1Cs. They're able to adjust the patient's medication up or down based on this remote patient monitoring information. And what that does is, number one, it's healthier for the patient, better quality of life, better outcome. It also results in the physician getting paid for some of their quality measures that they're being judged by. So for example, the A1C, if that, by doing the remote patient monitoring, if they're able to lower the patient A1C, that results in, that triggers bonus payments for the physician. And the physician and the pharmacist have worked out an arrangement where the physician then shares some of those extra payments with the pharmacist. So their services are paid for. And that's something that we see growing, where pharmacists are embedded in physician practices. And again, receiving this information from patients who are, you know, outpatients at home, and the pharmacist is able to use their expertise as the medication expert on the team to adjust the patient's therapy. And of course, they report that back to the physician, so the physician knows what's going on. But those are some of the success. That's an example of some of the value-based care, some of the ways in which, you know, you guys, different ways way beyond dispensing, that pharmacists are able to partner with other healthcare members.
Right. That's a great example of value-based care. What are some of the things that need to change around policy and payment to help make the pharmacist part of this expanded care team?
The biggest thing from a policy standpoint would be for pharmacists to be recognized as providers in Medicare. That would be the single biggest thing. But because Medicare is such a large payer, so many patients are affected by it, not having provider status has been a huge barrier. Some states, in fact, quite a number of states have passed state laws that recognize the pharmacist and are able to pay the pharmacist.
For our listeners, having provider status would allow Medicare to pay those pharmacists for the more clinical services that they'd provide. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And right now, pharmacists are paid through Medicare Part D. And unfortunately, Medicare Part D is very siloed. And so you know, forces people to look at the drugs as a cost center instead of thinking about the prescription drugs as really a way to lower overall healthcare costs. And Medicare provider status would allow pharmacists to be able to provide services and be paid for those services, would lower overall healthcare costs for the entire system, for patients,
right,
for other providers.
So then whenever I've heard this talked about, then somebody will eventually come up and say, you know, okay, pharmacists should say they get paid to provide more clinical services. Again, not taking on the role of a primary care physician, but supplementing it. Aren't pharmacists burned out too? And where does that fit in the equation? How do they have time to provide these services?
Yeah, and there have been a number of high-profile stories showing where many pharmacists are overwhelmed and are burned out. It's more prominent in the big chains, and that's where the national stories have been focused on. However, it's across the board that there's a lot of pharmacy teams are under stress to do more with less. Part of the problem is the economic model, where prescription drugs are being paid at the reimbursement is so low that it's causing economic strife, economic pressures from a staffing standpoint. So that's one of the problems that needs to be solved for. And when those three ingredients were put together, that pharmacists had the authority, pharmacists were paid fairly, and there was scale, great things happened. And as there are other opportunities, if pharmacists, again, have those three ingredients, they are able to make huge impacts on the healthcare system.
This is one of my favorite parts of the podcast, where we wrap it up with some rapid fire questions. Not so rapid fire. This year, we're thinking about how healthcare can heal itself. So I've got a few questions. First, healthcare's hurting. You've just talked about some of it. What's your diagnosis for what's wrong?
One problem is the waste. We have inefficiencies that not only cost more, but also do not result in optimal healthcare outcomes for our patients. Healthcare is local for the most part, and the bigger and bigger and bigger healthcare gets, it seems like the harder and harder and harder it is to get healthcare and to really get those optimal outcomes.
And so how would you heal healthcare? What prescription would you write?
The communication between health systems and healthcare providers, some of the lack of coordination is startling to me. The lack of coordination and communication, the duplication of efforts, the not knowing, you know, for one provider not to know what another provider has done. And again, this is something that where Surescripts is playing a big role and can continue to play an even bigger role, is to have that coordination of care. But if I were to wave a magic wand or have a magic prescription writing pen, it would be, or I guess not a pen anymore, Surescripts. It would be that coordination of care.
Thank you for a great discussion. You've given us a picture of the pharmacist in a smaller community as part of a care team, really thinking about their patient every day and then sometimes in the middle of the night, as you said. So thanks for a great discussion, Doug.
My pleasure, Melanie. Thanks for having me on your show.
In today's episode, Doug Hoy talked with us about why independent pharmacies are so important. They're everywhere, for starters, in rural areas, in suburban areas, and in urban areas. Many of these pharmacies represent the last mile, in places where patients lack access to primary care, and where they rely on their community pharmacy to provide the care they need. So when it comes to helping healthcare heal itself, independent pharmacy is a critical part of the healing. This is a picture of pharmacists in smaller communities of pharmacists who get to know many of their patients on a first-name basis. It's a picture of pharmacists as an important part of the care team, who have their patients on their minds every day, and often at night too. And finally, it's a picture of pharmacists under pressure to do more with less, just like medical doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals at work today. So, what is Doug's prescription for the challenges we face in healthcare today? His prescription is that we liberate healthcare professionals to take care of their patients, to focus on them, not on administrative and bureaucratic tasks, but by making the business of healthcare more efficient and less wasteful. This will go a long way to helping healthcare heal itself. I want to thank you for being part of our show today, Doug, and I want to thank our audience for taking time out of their day to listen. Thank you for listening in today. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, subscribe, and review. There's a better way. Smart Talk on healthcare and technology. With your help, we'll be able to continue to bring great conversations to the fore and to the wider listening public. Thank you.